Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, folks. I'm Chris.
Hey, and I'm James.
Did you know that the state of Delaware has had only one serial killer since its creation?
Did you know that the state of Arizona has one of the best cases of alien abduction on record?
Did you also know that famed untouchable Elliot Ness was thwarted by the Cleveland Torso murderer?
What in the world? That sounds absolutely terrifying.
Are you ready for a road trip? If so, please join James and I each episode as we discuss all this and more on State of Fear Podcast.
Ride shotgun on our dark and wonderful ride down America's byways and highways as we unravel the strange and macabre in your state.
State of Fear, where the things that go bump in the night are in your backyard.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, y'all, and welcome to Kudzu Killers, Homicide, and Sweet Tea, where we'd like to share gothic tales of Southern-style murder.
I'm Lark, and the other voice you hear is Kim. Each week, we take turns telling you the gruesome details of serial killers, spree killers, and just plain old mean people that we find interesting, and we hope you do too. Sometimes quirky and weird, but always respectful.
So sit back, grab your glass of iced tea, relax, and let us take you step by step through our story. And feel free to shoot us a comment on a specific episode on our blog at kudzukillerspodcast.blogspot.com.
Now, let's get on with the show. How's your day?
Oh, it's pretty good so far.
Awesome. Because guess what?
What?
I have a really cool story, I think.
Oh, cool. What is it this time?
Well, you know, we've mentioned our thoughts on capital punishment here before.
Yes. We have opposing views.
And that's okay. I mean, no, we don't actually have opposing views. I see Kim's point, which we'll tell y'all later. But so I feel like it's only fitting that I be the one to tell y'all more about the actual execution process and the executioner's duties. So here we go.
Okay.
So you guys may or may not know this, but the United States still ranks fifth in the world for capital punishment.
Wow.
As a result of 2014, specific details of the execution process have been shrouded in more and more secrecy. Now, there's a reason for that, and we're going to get to that. In fact, a new law has made it impossible to know what really happens in the death chamber.
I can see that.
Yeah, there are some good reasons to
this. People don't need to know all the details.
Well, you know, they're more legal details, really. Legal reasons. So the Iowa Senate approved HB 663 with a 20-10 vote, and this is called the Secret Executions Bill. It exempts anyone participating in a lethal injection from public records or requests that might reveal their identities or duties.
Okay, so this is the executioner, in other words, that we don't get to know their name. Is that what you mean?
Well, what it does is it would apply to medical and non-medical staff, companies transporting or preparing supplies or equipment used in the executions, and the providers of the drugs used in the lethal execution, at least in lethal injection.
Okay.
That basically means you can't, it's kind of like it's sealed.
Right. The details of who does the deed is, and
yes,
who provides the stuff to do the deed with are,
yes,
are,
yes,
sealed.
And so under this law, participants in executions may be sued if they reveal any confidential information or identities.
Well, yeah.
Now, but that also goes back to the reason why they're doing this. Okay. So 10 states have passed this sort of gag rules, and some of the other states include, you'll love this, Florida, Georgia, Texas, Mississippi, Tennessee, Missouri, Oklahoma, Colorado, South Dakota, and Arizona.
There's a trend there.
Yeah, in case y'all don't know your southern United States geography, that's pretty much the southern states.
And a couple of northern states and a western state, but pretty much most of the south.
Yeah.
I did not see Arkansas on there or hear Arkansas.
No, no, I think that there's a couple of states that are still kind of in the process. So anyway, part of the reason for this is that sometimes things go horribly wrong due to the fact that most of the execution teams are not specifically trained for the task itself. Mm. For example,
that's not good.
Yeah, that, and this is really where this law, the turning point for this. For example, the execution of Dennis McGuire on January the 16th in 2014 did not go as planned. He was injected with an untested cocktail of drugs. Mm. The Ohio death row inmate gasped and choked, writhed in his restraints.
Oh, jeez.
In front of anybody who was there watching him, including his family.
Oh, no.
McGuire was declared dead after 26 minutes. That's a very long time.
So he writhed in pain for 26 minutes.
Yep, in front of everybody. Having endured the longest execution in the state's history, his family sued, of course, enter the secrecy bill. So that's what makes it all the more interesting to hear the story of one man's experience as an executioner, because he's singing like a jailbird. No, no, no. I couldn't help it. Anyway, okay, so what is commonly called executioner is not a career. This comes from former Oregon death row warden Frank Thompson, who oversaw two executions at Oregon State Penitentiary. He also states, think of them as soldiers, he advised, in the war against crime. Think of them as being sent into a tiny room to kill someone.
That would weigh heavily. I couldn't do it.
Well, yeah, so there's more. Still, within those teams reside individuals with singular tasks that make them stand out from the rest. With the electric chair, there's always someone who pulls the switch. Robert Dunham, executive director of the Death Penalty Information Center, where you can get lots of cool info, he explains that with lethal injection, there's somebody who pushes the button that releases the chemical. But nobody is responsible for everything. The conductor of the whole process is the warden. The warden makes the choice of who is to perform all tasks associated with carrying out an execution. It would be fair to argue that even when there's a single button or a switch, lethal injection is usually more complicated than that, but there are multiple executioners. But what do we really know about these people? We know they're not trained.
Right.
Period.
Which is wrong, in my opinion, but okay.
They're just in teeny bit print at the bottom of their job description, it says, and any other tasks we ask you to do, basically.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So members of teams resign sometimes, and they occasionally speak up. Enter Jerry Givens, who calls himself Virginia's executioner from 1982 to 1999. And he has spoken publicly about the procedures involved in an execution, but he doesn't talk much about his colleagues. He's not really, he's kind of not interested in them. He's talking about himself. So in 2013, Givens told The Guardian that he was a corrections officer on a more traditional career path prior to becoming an executioner, meaning he just thought he was going to be a prison guard, you know?
Yeah.
He explained that there's a death team, not just on the night of execution, but in the days leading up to it. Jerry Givens himself, who has killed 62 prisoners over 17 years, spoke openly about the horrific moment convicts are electrocuted. Now, if you do the math, and I did for y'all, that's an average of 3 to 4 people a year. So think one person every 3 to 4 months. So anyway, but in 17 years, you figure 3 to 4 people. I mean, it's just like every 3 to 4 months. That's a lot of people. But also, I mean, it's not just that it's a lot of people. It's a lot on that guy, on that person, just like you said.
Absolutely. Yeah.
This is an emotional thing we're talking about, to take a normal human being and put them in this situation. So he goes on to say that he's 55 years old. He's really not an old guy, and he's spent a lot of time doing this.
Right.
So he says, regarding electrocutions, if the person is a small guy, you don't give that much voltage. You don't want to cook the body. He said, I hate to sound gross, but you don't want to fry the body.
But if you don't give enough.
Right. So it's quick, like turning your light switch off, basically. So Givens kept his post a secret, even from his wife. He said the secret made him an emotional yo-yo. And if he had known what he had to go through as an executioner, he would have never done it. So he goes on to say, you can't tell me I can take a life of these people and go home and be normal. And that's what I totally agree with that.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, you know, if you were enjoying it, you'd be catering to a whole nother level of, you know, insanity. Right. So when asked about the process, Givens describes on the day before they begin what is called a 24-hour death watch. Normally, he would be there starting at 9 p.m. during the death watch and spend the night at the institution in case something would occur during that period. Everything is reported that happens. They have security guards for the death team, a special group of people who simply maintain security for the death chamber specifically. Inmates arrive at Greensville in Virginia, the institution with the death chamber. Right. So I guess they only do it in one place.
Like here. Yeah, in Texas, it's Huntsville, right?
Yeah, it's Huntsville. We all know what it looks like outside. At least I do. Yeah. Anyway, the inmates arrive at Greenville 15 days prior to the execution date. And for those
15 days?
Yes, 15 days. So they're there for like 2 weeks. They move them because there's a huge process. For those days, they have to provide security around the clock. They continue to test the equipment, whether they have an electrocution or not. But on the day of an electrocution or during that week, they would have all sorts of training. Kind of like, I guess, run-throughs, because there's really no training, quote-unquote. So they train for the worst, meaning they train for if the man will put up resistance or not. Right. And, you know, most times he says they don't, but sometimes it would get rough.
Well, yeah, I'd be fighting my way all the way to the chair. I mean,
I think I would be, but I don't know if I would be resigned to it or not. I think it depends on if I was going to the chair or if I was going, I don't know. But anyway, so on the day of the execution, they could almost usually tell if the condemned had accepted it or not, which is what we're kind of saying.
Right.
You know, and some folks resign themselves to it, you know, and Givens said that he would try to see if the inmate is at that level, if he's ready or not. And usually if he's not, there's like tension in the building and you can really sense it growing. And while this is happening, the prisoner is preparing to get things together for his last meal and who he might want to see. Most of the time during the actual execution, Givens was behind a partition, like behind a curtain with his equipment.
Right.
Now, he says he was alone as the executioner, but he had a crew that would go and escort the inmate and place him on the gurney or the chair and then strap him down. And then a doctor would later confirm whether the heart is stopped or not. Now, to give you the actual breakdown, blow by blow of it, here we go. So he goes on to explain the different types of executions he's had to perform. And when he first started, it was only death by electrocution. Okay. Electrocution consists of 2,400 to 3,000 volts. The condemned receives 45 seconds of a high volt shock and 45 seconds of the low cycle. It takes about 2.5 minutes. Then there is a 5-minute grace period to let the body cool down.
Oh, geez.
Then the physician goes in the room with the stethoscope to see if there is a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the mid-1990s, Virginia decided to go with lethal injection instead. And that consists of 7 tubes that are injected into the left arm, 3 tubes of chemicals, and 4 that are flesh. The first chemical, which is sodium pentothal, is administered.
Okay.
Then a flesh. Then the second chemical.
What does the flesh do?
You know, I am not sure. I think that's kind of like pushing it. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Pushing
right.
it, uh-huh. you know, like when you get fluids and, you know.
Right.
The second chemical is pancuronium. I think I'm saying that right. And then another flesh. And then the third chemical is the potassium chloride. And then a final flesh at the end.
Okay.
This is so toxic that people who remove the body must be kept from being exposed to the chemicals after the fact. Given states that if he had a choice, he would choose death by electrocution, that it's more like cutting off your lights.
Right.
I think he means from
Faster.
His point of view, his yeah. point of view, not from the prisoner. You know what I mean?
Right.
He says it's a button you push once and then the machine runs by itself. It relieves the executioner from being attached to it in some ways, as in you can't see the current going through the body. But with mm-hmm. the chemicals, and I really visualized this as I was thinking about it and reading about it. With the chemicals, it takes a while because you're dealing with 3 separate chemicals, 6 different pushes, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And you're on the other end with a needle in your hand, he said. You can see the reaction of the body. You can see the different chemicals and poisons clearly going down the tube, because the tube is clear, because you've got to watch it move, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can actually see the chemical going down the line and into his arm, and you see the effects of it one by one. He says, so you're more attached to it.
Right.
So to him, death by electrocution in some ways seems more humane. Of course, I've never been killed, so I don't know, right?
Right.
So
it just seems like that's a slower way to go. I'm not so sure I'd want, I think probably the most heinous execution method they used to have is the gas chamber.
Well, yeah.
Because you're sitting there for how long breathing in the cyanide gas that they used to put the little pellets down in, you know.
Right, but, you know, we don't do that anymore, so.
Right, right. I mean, this would have to be really hard on somebody who knew they were killing somebody, you know?
Well,
I mean, you know, you're killing somebody, and.
Exactly. And you didn't really sign up for that. You did
right.
not sign up for that. You were just told, you know. It's
and
like
other things we ask you to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's in almost every job description.
Well, yeah,
out
but
there,
hey.
But you just don't think about it when you sign up to be a guard that you might be the guy
no.
pushing
because
the
you
button
think,
or the syringe. You know?
You think that's a professional job. You think, okay,
right.
that's what those people are trained to do. They'll never call me.
And it should be, in my
well,
opinion.
Yeah. I agree with you. I totally agree with you.
It should be a medical team doing that, not, I mean, I guess I guess maybe they refuse to do that because of their Hippocratic Oath or something like that, but.
That's why, but okay. that doesn't, but there are some exceptions, so we'll talk about that in a second, so yeah.
Okay.
So in a feature published in 2000 by the New York Times, Terry Green, a member of the death team in the Walls unit of Huntsville, Texas, America's busiest death row.
The express lane.
Yeah. Sorry. Anyway, he said that members of that unit had to be at least a sergeant in the State Department of Corrections. So there's a little more, I guess, history.
They have a little more experience.
Yeah, on the job, kind of. Yeah. Maybe. And anyway, so he says he was on the tie down team, which is the group that straps the condemned person onto a gurney before they're executed.
I can't imagine.
I can't either. According to Dunham, that particular thing was Texas specific, as in demanding them to be a sergeants. I think that's a good thing. Not just because
throwing a 20-year-old kid who
right,
wanted a
right.
job as a prison guard into
yeah, a killer.
Killing people. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's Texas and we're from Texas, but I think this is a good thing. Anyway, so he says that that particular thing is Texas specific. He said that he's never seen restrictions based on a rank in any other state or set right. of regulations. In other executions, the condemned inmate shifts to a special holding cell near the execution chamber during the lead up to the big day, necessitating a separate security detail. And Dunham explained Givens' use of the term security, Remember, he was saying there's a security team.
Right.
It's not that there's a danger of escape necessarily increasing the run up to the execution, but that the situation just keeps getting more complicated. Okay. So warrants are statutorily mandated at different stages of the legal proceedings, including the final death warrant. So with each step, he explains, there are special security precautions taken for the transport of the prisoner. There's security and secrecy about when the person is going to be moved, along with who he or she may speak to and what materials they may have.
Okay.
Executioners don't tend to be experts in their field, as we said before, and they have minimal to no training.
That's just crazy to me.
I know. And so what happened with Givens was he assisted with his first execution in 1982. Now, he was just assisting, you know, he wasn't actually kind of like, you know, really hard into it. But before the next one rolled around, the previous executioner had grown ill and retired. So when Givens was asked to take his place, death row was also empty in Virginia, so it didn't really freak him out so much, right?
Right. So he's like, I don't have anything to do, so sure, I'll take this job.
And right.
Maybe it was more pay. I don't know.
It's not. Again, I'll explain that to you too. According to Dunham with the Death Penalty Information Center, again, remember the man with all the info?
Right.
He's been critical about the way states carry out executions, and this lack of training is really typical, and it irks him, not just for the person tasked with doing the fatal deed, but for the whole team.
Right.
Because it's unethical for doctors, nurses, and EMTs to participate. You typically end up with just generic prison personnel performing the execution, he says. It's a process that, in the case of lethal injections particularly, it includes tasks like finding a vein for an IV and measuring the drug doses.
If they're not trained to do that, I mean, you can roll around a vein all day long if you're not trained to the...
Kim, I doubt I could find a vein. I mean, I just really don't think I could.
I mean, I could, but that's because I used to do it and I was trained to do it, so...
Well, that's, you know, the average bear... Probably can't unless you're a drug addict and you figure it out. But, you know, I'm just seeing trauma for everyone involved on a whole bunch of levels, because you know how you feel when you go to give blood and they stick you and they stick you and they can't get it.
Right.
You know, I mean, you gotta have a little sympathy for the prisoner, you know?
Well, yeah. Absolutely.
So I'm not as hard as y'all think I am. Golly gee.
Yes, you are.
I'm a rock wrapped up in chocolate.
You're a marshmallow.
Take a bite. Yeah. Oh, well, I can't be a marshmallow. But so can you. But I'm not telling
you. I'm not as big a marshmallow as I am. I mean, I'm a lot harder than Kim.
Even though big, fluffy,
stay puffed.
Yeah, Kim is a total marshmallow, and you would never think it, but it's true.
No, you wouldn't. Not if you knew me, you would not think that. But
yeah, and I'm the big old hairy bee, let me tell you. So, anyway, okay. So to the presence of medical professionals in other types of execution is rare too. So in the case of the electric chair, Dunham explains that everybody involved, from those walking the inmate into the room to those strapping the condemned into the chair and affixing the electrodes, are prison personnel. So now I'm sure that y'all have all probably seen the Green Mile. And you know about the sponge that goes on your head.
Yeah, we were just discussing this on Twitter the other day. What is the movie that has been most disturbing to you and has affected you the most? And my response was The Green Mile, because I had left that theater, y'all, with my shirt collar was soaked because I had bawled my eyes out during that movie. It is very haunting.
It's rough.
And sad. Yeah.
Well, just a little snippet, of course, in the Green Mile, his sponge was dry.
Yeah.
And most everybody knows that you're supposed to put water on it because it helps to conduct the electricity.
Right.
Okay. Well, it was actually the prison personnel who came up with the great idea of using a natural sponge, like a genuine sea sponge,
right,
after the notorious case of Jesse DeFaro, whose head caught on fire during his 1990 execution.
Oh, my word.
And let me tell you why.
Because they forgot to wet the sponge?
Oh, no. Because according to Ellen McGarahan, who reported on Tafaro's execution for Slate, maintenance workers, not correction officers, actually made the fateful purchase of the synthetic sponge.
Oh, no.
Which is highly flammable, people, even if it's wet, because it's gonna dry it and boom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, exactly.
So anyway, the lack of doctors and nurses at executions isn't terribly surprising because killing someone is generally frowned upon in the medical community.
Sort of the exact opposite of what you're supposed to be doing, right?
But nonetheless, medical personnel do often participate in lethal injections occasionally, according to the Los Angeles Times. But they're just not always the most reputable members of their profession. One doctor named Alan Dorhoff famously got himself banned from Missouri's death row for sheer incompetence.
Talked about sheer incompetence before.
Banned from being an executioner?
Yeah,
So
that is pretty sad.
Let me tell you why. He testified in court that his dyslexia, interfered with his ability to read drug names and that he improvised, quote unquote, doses. Holy moly!
He improvised because yes. He couldn't. Oh, jeez.
Okay, so now here's something you may or may not love. I kind of like this next idea. Okay, so there's one potential become an executioner quit scheme in Utah. And according to Dunham, the jurisdiction in which the jurisdiction in which the murder occurred in Utah gets asked if there are any law enforcement personnel in their jurisdiction who want to volunteer.
To I be personally the like that.
Yes.
Well, I actually think, yeah, it's actually better to get somebody who is into it, for lack of a better word,
but you know,
because it's going to traumatize somebody who never signed up for that. I would think.
Well, to go in and do that,
and if that's not something that they want to do, they really shouldn't have to be forced to. If there's somebody out there that says, "Pick me," they should be taken first. Yeah.
Well, I think they should be taken first, but also too, I can imagine this is the sick way, I think. That if the person was involved with the whole thing, maybe them allowed to flip the switch is also kind of, you know, full circle, so to speak. Do you know what I mean? Anyway,
yeah.
You have a much better take on it. I'm the ghoulish one. Anyway,
yes,
broadly speaking.
Are.
Come follow me into the cemeteries,
it
you guys.
It is something that I can agree with you on. Wholeheartedly.
But you'd never know us if you saw us. Because we're lovely and sweet and flower-like. Anyway, broadly speaking, though, correction officers are usually the ones who end up becoming the executioners, which I think is sad. There's, again, we're saying no specific training beyond the standard state-by-state eligibility for correction officers. Going back to Texas, okay? At least Texas does say that you must never have been convicted of a drug-related offense. That's another thing. I have no idea why.
So you can't be injecting something off of them while you're shooting up the other stuff?
At least they'd know how to find a freaking vein, but that's another thing. Okay, so meanwhile, you were asking me before, no bonus or extra pay for executing people.
That kind of sucks. I want some money.
Guess what? Even the standard pay is only between $39,000 and $50,000. Can you imagine? And you get benefits.
I actually knew that because I do know several people who are prison guards, believe it or not, or have been prison guards, and it's not that great.
No, for putting up with all that craziness and sanity every single day. And oh my God, I can't even imagine. I'm grateful they do it because somebody's got to do it, not me. Anyway, Thompson confirmed this, saying all staff receive their regular pay unless scheduling or training requires them just to be paid overtime. Wow. Mm-hmm. Now, Thomas was eager to warn anyone thinking about becoming an executioner that there are drawbacks. And he is kind of reiterating the same thing that you and I are saying, that all staff who volunteer to be a part of an execution feel the stress. And he pointed out that PTSD can reach all members of an execution team, no matter how indirect their involvement. And he's also concerned. Oh, no doubt. I mean, it's a bond that I wouldn't want to have with those people. Right. Anyway, so he is also concerned about a stigma to it, to be called an executioner. Remember, we said that Givens never told his family or anything.
Right. I wouldn't either. No.
Well, for years and years, can you imagine? So, for example, in India, executioners were considered shandala. That means untouchable. And they were completely cast out from society. So Thompson, who remember he was the superintendent / warden,
right?
He says to some degree that he feels that's still true. I believe that.
Yeah.
You know, you would be shunned no matter what society, what culture you came from. So I do feel that this is exactly what Givens was trying to say in his recounting of his experience of how it took a toll on him mentally and emotionally. Mm-hmm. And also why he never, you know, told anyone his actual job was, not his wife or his kids. I mean, I just can't imagine the stress, really.
No, it would be awful. Yeah, that's not a job I could ever do. And I wouldn't wish it on anybody.
And Thomas goes on to say, there are risks that the societal perception of an executioner as being some sort of freak or alien or person of some fundamentally undesirable character flaw will continue to be perpetuated. Which, yeah.
Well, of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, people look at executioners like they're murderers too. And really, it's their job and they don't really have a choice in it. Not that they enjoy getting up there and, you know, pushing a button and taking somebody's life. I mean, I'm sure there are some who do, but most people don't, I don't think, and wouldn't.
Well, you know, even in the olden days, they wore a hood for several reasons. They didn't, you know, the whole world didn't need to see who they were.
Right.
And some of them had a lot of compassion. I mean, they tried to do it quick for people, you know? I mean, it was an art, but still. Capital punishment is a system, he says, that points for everyone who votes for it to be a part of the executioner. So he's stumping his politics there.
Well, I think it's really horrific and a shame that these people, that they don't have specifically trained teams of people to do these executions. I mean, I understand cost and everything like that. And I understand that people think they should be dead because they did a horrific crime, but they shouldn't be
tortured through it.
Tortured. Exactly. That's the word I was looking for. Tortured.
Just
to get the justice that you want.
Right. So. I mean, it's okay just to, you know, a sharp blade, not a stick.
Dull.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know for, as all you guys know, Lark is for the death penalty in theory, but, you know, just like what we're discussing here, meaning that I do think that getting the needle the very next day is a little too fast, like they do in Russia. But, you know, I also believe that sitting on death row, especially in the United States, is far too long. And, you know, Kim points out that there are fiscal reasons that make it more financially reasonable on the taxpayers to not give such a sentence. And I totally agree with you on that. I really do. But it's hard. I think it's hard for just the average bear to reconcile with that sometimes. But, you know, so I hope y'all don't think that I'm as cold and horrible as it comes across.
I want to say in the state of California, it is 18 times more expensive to give someone the death penalty than it is to give them life without parole.
Wow. See?
18 times more. Because of the lengthy appeals process.
Right.
There are prisoners on death row there right now who have been there for nearly 50 years.
Well, right. And then every time they appeal and they don't have a lawyer, guess who has to pony up for the lawyer's pay? It's the state. So, I mean, the money. I totally agree with you. I really do. I mean, I know that we joke, but in the long run, it doesn't feel like justice, but it is justice to probably have them just in there, like you say, on life without parole. But
well, I just saw where Scott Peterson's death row conviction got overturned. Not the conviction, but they commuted it to life in prison without the possibility of parole. And quite frankly, I think that's going to hurt him a lot more than to sit on death row for 40 years while he appeals and gets
right.
whatever special right. treatment he wants.
He might right.
get.
It's, right. And, I think death row people probably get more a special treatment, I really do.
Yeah, I don't know that for a fact, but
no,
I
me
think
neither.
When they're going through the appeals process, they have a lot more contact with people on the outside.
Mm-hmm, and, exactly.
Than they would have just to be there in jail for the rest of their lives without anything like that.
Right. Well, that's our story today. I was interested in the process and the actual people who perform the duties. I really do feel for those people who have been harmed by their duties. And also, you know, I'm sorry for the prisoners that have been, it's a torture. 26 minutes to die from chemicals is probably
that's
horrific.
It's insane. It should
yeah.
never have happened.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's like being fried from the inside out. I'm just speculating again.
Yeah.
But anyway, I thought you guys might be as curious as I was.
Really interesting. That was
awesome.
And it's a very long mini episode, folks. But you
yeah,
see,
so we might turn it.
You get a double mini episode.
I'm so sorry. So it may have to become a long episode, but I don't know. But anyway, join us again. We have a lot more information for you guys every Tuesday and Friday. And we love y'all for being here. Thanks for letting us talk to you.
Thanks for listening.
Bye, y'all.
Bye, y'all. That's our episode for this week. Thanks for listening to us, and we hope you join us again every Tuesday for an exciting new episode.
Head on over to our blog at kudzukillerspodcast.blogspot.com and leave a comment or your ideas about the subject this week.
Or follow us on Twitter at kudzukillerspod, and you can shout out to us anytime or send a question for our next Q&A.
Yes, ma'am. And we'd love you forever if you leave us a review on whatever podcast blows your skirt up. We'd love to hear what you think of our new show.
If you'd like to become a part of the Kudzu Killers family, hop on over to patreon.com/kudzukillerspodcast and take a look at the goodies you get when you show us some love.
That's right. And if you love our music, check out Jody Jennings' music on Facebook, SoundCloud, or all social media and streaming music platforms.
So until next week,
or if we decide to shoot out a mini episode,
bye y'all.
Bye, y'all.